Everybody, welcome to another great episode of Evolutionary.org Raw podcast. I'm your host, Steve Smee. I'm with the Mason, Masonic bodybuilder, coming in from, where are you coming in from this time? New York?
North of the border, my friend.
New York. Let's call you New York, Ontario, New York. So we have a really cool show. Let's first talk about a little bit about sports. Sports! You know, we love our sports. So, you know, we saw some really cool action over the weekend in the NFL. Some really teams are starting to kind of separate themselves, I think. One team that's really kind of fucked themselves this year are the Giants. They're 0-5. They lost two of their starting receivers for the year. Brandon Marshall and Odell Beckham both have ankle injuries. They're gone for the season. Those are horrendous situations. They already have problems on offense. I mean, they could not score for shit their first couple games. They played better the past three games. But, man, I mean, they cannot afford injuries. And they had their last three games, they lost by 3 points, 2 points, and 5 points. They should have beat the Chargers. They let that game slip away. So their offense has played better the past 3 weeks, but now without their two starting receivers, they are fucked. But I'll tell you what, all those New York Giants fans, you're actually going to be glad you had a shitty season, because now you're going to be able to get a quarterback, because there's going to be two or three NFL caliber quarterbacks in the draft, and you have to groom someone behind Eli for the next 2 or 3 years. So this is going to be a blessing in disguise. If the Giants were smart, they would tank and they would get a top five pick and get one of those quarterbacks, because we've seen what a great quarterback early in the draft can do. Who were the quarterbacks taken 2 years ago in the draft? Wentz and Goff. And now look, both those teams are kicking ass. The Eagles are 4-1. They've scored 137 points. That's as many points as Green Bay has scored with Aaron Rodgers. The Rams are 3-2. They've scored 152 points this year, which is more than even the Patriots have scored. Okay, that is most in the NFL. So those two quarterbacks totally have turned those franchises around, and you have the opportunity to get a quarterback. Now, what team did the opposite? What team fucked themselves? The Jets. They've won three straight games. They're 3-2. And they're playing themselves right out of an opportunity to get one of those franchise quarterbacks, because they haven't had a quarterback since Joe Namath. So what do you think, Matt? You think I'm real or no? I think you're muted.
Yeah, I was just trying to keep my conversation top secret over here. you know what? You're absolutely right about the Jets. They really screwed themselves. This is a really strong draft for quarterbacks, and that's how you have to build your team now. You need that quarterback. And it's funny because a lot of times you don't even realize where these guys are coming from, and sometimes they don't get the credit. But you see guys like Alex Smith. Like, the Chiefs right now are unreal, you know? And where did that come from? Nobody was predicting that. They're 5-0. And a big part of that is their quarterback. Like, he's playing amazing. You know, and then you look at the Patriots, right? They pulled off their win. And unfortunately for me, being a Bills fan, the Bills fell apart. I think a lot of it's due to the weather. But that kept them. Now they're right back up there, tied for first with the Bills and with the Jets. So that division's kind of all over the place. You look at the AFC North. I expected Cleveland to blow. They've been terrible for years. But the rest of it's up in the air. I mean, Pittsburgh and Baltimore are both 3-2. Cincinnati's 2-3. Think of how bad Cincinnati's played. And they're still right there. I don't think they scored a touchdown in their two first games they played. Jacksonville's putting up points, too. It's just football is one of those sports, you know, you can kind of come out of nowhere and you can have a good year. Like Steve said, Philadelphia is off to a great start. Green Bay, we kind of, you know, would have thought they would be in good shape. They're 4-1 too. Carolina, could this be their rebound year after, you know, last year not doing well? This year they're right back in it again. So it's been a lot of fun. But I mean, the awesome thing with football is the importance of every game. You know, we're only 5 games in, and you can pretty well say the Giants are done. You know, to write off a New York City team this early in the season, it's, you know, you don't think it's likely, but man, you look at it, I don't see how they could come back.
Yeah, you actually mentioned the Chiefs. I apologize. They are actually the highest scoring offense. I said it was the Rams. I was wrong. Rams are number 2, but the Chiefs are number 1 highest scoring offense. Jaguars have a hell of a defense, and what's funny about Jacksonville are two things. They are the number 1 running team in the NFL, and they're number 3 against the pass on defense. So basically, their formula has been, we're going to run it down your fucking throat, and you're not going to be able to stop us, and we're going to build a lead on you, and you're not going to be able to come back. And that's how they blew out Baltimore and they blew out Pittsburgh, because Pittsburgh and Baltimore could not throw the ball on them at all, so they could not make a comeback. So if the Jaguars can build leads on teams, this team should be 4-1 right now. They should have beat the Jets in the prior week. They lost to the Jets by a field goal. If they should be 4-1 right now. They're a legit team, and I think they are in my view the favorites in the AFC South. You know, if they continue this formula of running it down your throat and then not allowing you to come back, if they can build leads in games, they have a real good ball-hawking defense. All that talent that they've picked early in the first round, they're kind of like the Edmonton Oilers in hockey. They sucked so many years. They had so many high picks, high first-round picks and high second-round picks on defense that are finally paying off. All those guys that they picked are finally paying off. And I agree with you, the AFC North is wide open. Cincinnati, the interesting thing about Cincinnati is that people don't know this, but they have the number 2 defense in the NFL, and they're number 2 against the pass. So if you can play great defense, you're always going to be dangerous as the season goes on. So they're only a game out in the AFC North, and a lot of people said that they were finished. They were just 0-3. Now they're suddenly 2-3, and anything can happen. Pittsburgh isn't playing well. Baltimore is up and down each week, so that division is wide fucking open. It's going to be an awesome season in the NFL. You have anything else you want to add, Matt?
You're pretty well up to date on the AFC East, I think, and you know a lot about the Miami Dolphins. Do you want to give us a quick update on the little saga going on there?
Yeah, apparently the offensive line coach was caught on video snorting a white substance. So this is a good lesson to you guys out there. Don't be fucking stupid and don't do stupid shit like this, okay? Because with social media, anyone can get a hold of a video that you take of you being an idiot and come at you. Yeah, can kind of like use that against you. So like if you have a girlfriend or something, you do like a sex tape with her and she has that video, and one day you have a job and she decides to call you up and be like, hey, I have a sex video of you. You have a choice. You can either PayPal me $5,000 or I'm going to post this video on a website and email it to all your coworkers, and email it to your wife and email it to or your girlfriend or whatever. So don't be stupid. Don't put stupid shit on video, guys. I mean, this guy's a fucking moron, and he's considered one of the top 3 or 4 offensive line coaches in the NFL. He's a guy that's been, I think he's the second highest paid offensive lineman in the NFL, and he's been sought after by a lot of teams for offensive coordinator positions and even head coaching positions. So he's very well regarded, and he fucked his career. He had to resign. So that's a lesson. Don't be a fucking idiot, and you know, be smart about what you do.
So I guess we should address the elephant in the room, because it doesn't seem to be going away. It seems to just be picking up steam as it goes. is this whole idea of protesting during the national anthem at a sporting event. Now, I'm not sure where this whole thing's transformed. I mean, when it started with Colin Kaepernick, this was all in response to, you know, police brutality towards the black community, right? There were a lot of incidences that happened, and this is when he decided he was going to take a knee during the anthem. Now, I don't know what it's become. I don't know what it is now, but I know that it's huge. This thing has just exploded. My personal opinion, I might be a little different than a lot of you guys. I don't feel that anthems should be done at sporting events at all. I don't think there's a link between sports and, you know, the flag and military and those kind of things anymore. I guess it might be different if you're at an Army-Navy game or something like that, but I just assume get them out of sports. But this is a really tough one because on one hand, you want to fight for, you know, the freedom of speech, the freedom to protest peacefully. But on the other hand, you don't want to disrespect, you know, what you would consider the flag, the national anthem, the military. So it really is a tough one to explain. It's obviously been, you know, extremely popular in the NFL going back to last year, this year. The NBA, there's a lot of linking of arms, those things. And we actually had our first NHL protest this year. JT Brown, who happens to be a black player for the Tampa Bay Lightning, actually had his fist up in the air, which the team, everybody was aware that he was going to do that. But it is something that just seems to be growing and growing. And like I said, I'm not sure where it's going or what, you know, what we're even talking about anymore. But it's evolved to just this massive political thing that's really, you know, consuming sports.
Yeah, the whole national anthem at sporting events, the whole reason that started, it's actually the government that pays to do this and make a spectacle about it, because they're trying to recruit young people to join the military. There's a major problem with recruitment because the military, if you're an enlisted person, you get paid very, very poorly. An enlisted person, I'll give you an example, and you can go online and look this up, you get paid somewhere between $1,400 and $1,600 a month if you're an enlisted person at the very bottom. You got to work your way up. And even if you're in the military for 20 years, if you don't have an college education, a degree, you can be in the military 20 years and you'll still make, you won't become an officer. So you need that degree in the military to make any sort of money. And even if you have a degree and you're an officer, you start as an officer, you're still only starting out with like $4,500 a month, which is not a lot of money. So obviously they have to find a way to recruit people to basically take a job that doesn't pay much money. And, you know, so obviously sporting events would be a good opportunity because 70,000 people show up to a football game and 20,000 people show up to a hockey game or a baseball game or a basketball game. So that's how the whole, you know, national anthem started and stuff. So the whole Kaepernick thing started because he was, like Matt said, was protesting. Now the Trump basically turned it into a political thing because he came out and said that if you don't stand for the national anthem, you should be cut, whatever. What he's attempting to do is just drive a wedge. And he succeeded. He's the president, and he has a lot of power to do stuff like that and kind of divide people. So now he turned it into a more of a political thing, like where if you don't stand for the flag, you know, you should be cut. And, you know, you're disrespecting the military, you're disrespecting cops and firefighters and whatever. It turned into this totally weird thing that it was never even intention to doing. So now players want to kneel or stay in the tunnel because they want to protest Trump instead of protesting inequality, which was the original thing. So Trump succeeded in dividing us. As you know, that's what politicians do. They like to do that. They like to fire up their supporters because he has very low approval ratings. He has the lowest approval rating in the history of presidents at this stage of his presidency. His approval rating, I think, is like 32% in a poll I just saw. So that's like less than one in three people support him as president. So obviously he wants to fire up his base and divide people. The problem with this is that most players in the NFL and the NBA are black. And all the owners are white. I think there's one NBA owner that's black. I'm not sure. And in the NHL, the majority of players are either are white, obviously, but they're not U.S.-based. And Matt, I think you can confirm those statistics. A lot of them are from Canada and Europe. So they don't have that nationalistic thing about them. I would say very small percentage of players in the NBA or in NFL are nationalistic type people, but 80 or 90% of Trump supporters are nationalistic people who basically want to sleep with the flag. You know, that's like symbol. That's their symbol. They want to worship those types of symbolic things. So they view it as, hey, you're insulting the flag by sitting or not standing for the anthem or whatever. So I was just at a football game, guys. I would say more than half of the people were getting a hot dog, taking a piss, socializing in the, you know, behind the stands during the national anthem. Okay, so it's not that big a deal. If you're going to get your panties in a bunch over it, go to a game and just start yelling at everybody who's, you know, not standing in their seats during the national anthem, because most people, you know, they're more worried about getting to the game, getting a bite to eat, getting a drink, and taking a leak so they can enjoy the actual football game. So I agree with Matt. Let's focus on the fucking game and enough of this whole anthem bullshit, and let's just get over it. You know, it's just, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, so it's funny what happened on Sunday. The president and the vice president went to the San Francisco 49ers game, knowing full well what's going to happen. There's going to be these protests, and then made a spectacle of out of it that they left, right? They had to announce they were leaving because they cannot be part of something that's going to, you know, disrespect the flag and the military, making the entire thing political. And then what's even more interesting is that the Army football team decided they were all going to kneel during the anthem. So that really brings, you know, another part to this whole discussion. Now the military schools are actually kneeling during the anthem. So what does that mean? Does that mean it's not disrespectful to the military? Do we have to change how we look at that? And then the other thing I just want to bring up, and then we can, you know, get off of this topic, is the, in quotes, whitest sport, hockey. All right, they've been talking about it all week because it is a white, primarily white sport. Were invited to the White House, and that happened to be today as we record, which is Tuesday. And the Pittsburgh Penguins decided as a team they were going to go. And the reason they wanted to go was because they didn't want to make it political. They wanted to just, you know, honor the office, as they said, and it's not about the person in the office. So when you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins ownership, the last three elections, they've actually donated a lot of money towards the Democratic Party. So it's blatantly obvious where their ties are, but they still felt that it was important to go. The other thing that, like, personally, I don't think it's really a big deal or worth talking about is when they went last year, because they are defending champions, they presented President Obama with a jersey that had a 44 on it. He's the 44th president. Well, they decided they were not going to present Trump with a jersey this year. So, of course, that gets a lot of news. And, you know, as we said, this thing just keeps spiraling on. Who knows when it's going to end? But, you know, anything major comes up, we'll certainly update you guys. It'll be really interesting to see what happens tonight. The Vegas Golden Knights in the NHL have their home opener. Obviously, it's very touchy since there was a shooting, obviously, that took place, I think, 9 days ago now. So that's going to be a very different atmosphere. And I wonder, you know, kind of what will take place then. A lot of people will, you know, probably be brought to tears, and, you know, maybe link arms, those kind of things.
It's but, a nationally televised game in the United States. I think it's on the NBC network, but unfortunately it doesn't start till past 10 o'clock Eastern. So I'm not going to stay up to watch, but I'm sure we'll hear about it tomorrow. I wish that's the problem with the NHL and NBA is if the teams are Western teams, we don't get to see them on the East Coast because of the time difference. I mean, who's going to stay up till 1 a.m. to watch a hockey or basketball game? So that's something I think that hurts those sports versus the NFL, which has 1 o'clock games typically. So, all right, so let's talk before our producers. My producer is yelling in my ear to get on steroid topics, get on steroid topics. Yes, we will talk about steroids. So let's talk about liver problems. A lot of people ask about liver. They're really concerned about liver. So, you know, first of all, the AST and ALT levels. Your typical range for AST is between 10 to 40 units per liter, and your ALT is between 7 and 56 units per liter when you do blood work. So your once they get elevated, it's 2 to 3 times higher than the normal range. So your liver is very resilient. The thing is, if it gets too high, you can start getting jaundice type of symptoms. So let me first say, before you know we continue, it's very important to get blood work before you start using steroids so you can flag any issues. So let's say you did blood work and your AST and ALT levels were elevated significantly. That would be a signal that something is wrong. Maybe you're taking some type of drug. Maybe you're drinking alcohol. I don't know. Maybe you have some underlying liver issue, but when you use toxic anabolic steroids like Anadrol, Anavar, D-Bol, T-Bol, Halo, any type of pro-hormone, most pro-hormones, which are liver topics, Superdrol, all these basically will strain your liver. So if you're going to have strained liver already and then you hop on toxic steroids, your liver values are going to go sky high and you're going to end up with liver issues. So liver is very important, guys. And it's so simple to just do blood work to confirm that everything is good. Matt, have you done liver tests lately?
Every time. Liver test is part of every blood work I've ever got. And it's so important. The one thing I want to point out, because we do get this a lot. So when you look at so many different conditions, a lot of them have the same symptoms, right? It's why we shouldn't just go on the internet and diagnose ourselves with brain cancer because we have a headache, right? This is just how we're programmed. The one thing I really want to bring up is chronic fatigue. And the reason why is because we get this question all the time on the forums. I'm on cycle, this is what I'm running, and I'm tired all the time. And if you notice, one of the things we always bring up is, are you using liver toxic oral steroids, and are you using a liver support supplement? And this is one of the primary indicators that there potentially could be a liver issue. So, yes, there are a lot of reasons you could be fatigued. But that is a big one. If you're running orals and you find you're tired all the time, getting blood work is always a safe bet. You always want to do it. And there's so many more symptoms with liver issues. Everybody knows about the yellow eyes and the yellow skin, basically meaning you're getting jaundice or you're at that point already. But all the other minor ones, it's the problem of individually, you don't think they're a big deal. You know, would you ever think itchy skin is a sign of a liver issue? Loss of appetite. You're not going to immediately have that and think, oh, I have a liver concern, right? But when you put all these things together, you know, dark urine, swelling in your legs, abdominal pain, nausea, vomiting, pale stool, you put all these things together, tendency to bruise easily is a big one. That's when it really comes into play. So yes, every single time you get blood work, you should absolutely have your liver values tested. For me, I know when I ask for blood work, it's standard. It's not anything extra that I have to ask for. So I wouldn't expect for most of you guys out there to have that issue. But if you are getting your blood work done and your liver values are high, don't run orals. Get that shit under control first. You need to be healthy, because over time, the stuff you do, you know, if you're going to constantly use orals, if you're going to drink, if you're going to use painkillers, it's not today you're going to get hurt. It's not next week or next month, but it's years down the road, years of pounding away at your liver, that all of a sudden it's going to take a shit.
Yeah.
And then it's too late.
Yeah, and then I'll let Matt. Matt is going to tell you some symptoms from liver damage that we've actually seen guys have who have come on the forums. We've seen pictures of guys post where their eyes are all yellow. It's freaky. It's like something from fucking Halloween or something. But let me go through some of these medications that you may be taking right now that are actually straining your liver and you probably don't even know it. How about seizure medications? If you're on any type of seizure medication, those are gonna cause liver issues. Psychiatric medications like antidepressants, those strain your liver. And a lot of times your doctor won't mention this. You know, no one reads those little things that come with it that say the side effects. Antifungal medications, tuberculosis medications, tuberculosis, that's a hard word to say. Antibiotics, some antibiotics will cause liver strain. How about cholesterol-lowering medications like statins, Lipitor, Zocor? Those people take that shit like fucking candy. Those cause liver strain. Pain medications like Aleve cause liver strain. Vicodin, Tylenol, Advil, all these cause liver strain. So I had a client come to me and I was going to put him on an oral steroid cycle because he didn't want to inject. So I'm like, dude, you need to run blood work. So he runs blood work and his AST, ALT levels are like 3-4 times normal. And I'm like, dude, what the fuck is going on here? And he's like, oh, by the way, I'm running antidepressant. I'm running a antibiotic. I'm running a cholesterol-lowering medication. I'm like, dude, you got to tell me this shit. I almost put you on oral steroids. Your fucking liver would have been fucking going sky high, you know? So, guys, you got to be smart here. Alcohol use is going to strain your liver, all right? So you need to cut off the alcohol. So how do we, you know, protect our liver? Obviously, you need to run sensible dosages of oral steroids. There's nothing wrong with liver toxic steroids. You just got to run them correctly. You don't run them at sky high dosages, and you don't use them for long periods of time. What is a long period of time? Anything longer than 6-8 weeks would be not good. And you can run blood work to confirm this. It's okay to keep your liver strained for a few weeks, but once you keep it strained for a long period of time, that's when the damage sets in. Matt?
Yeah, I want to mention something that you guys have probably never heard before, but there's a really good author. He writes articles on elite fitness. His name's Nelson Montana. Steve, you'd know Nelson. He wrote an article actually comparing scientifically alcohol consumption to oral steroid use. And what it turns out is you have to look at it in terms of averages, because oral steroids are all going to, you know, have different amounts of liver toxicity. On an average, one drink, which would be a shot, a glass of wine, or a beer, is going to equate to about 10 milligrams of an oral steroid, as far as how it affects your liver. So it's obviously going to be different. Like I said, 10 milligrams of D-ball is completely different than 10 milligrams of Anavar per se. So that's why I say, you know, it's an average, because that's the only way you could do it. But if you think about that, you know, if you're running, you know, take D-ball, which is one of the stronger ones. If you're running 40 milligrams of D-ball per day, you know, times four, that's about four drinks per day over the course of 4 to 6 weeks. That's a lot. If you're drinking that much, that's going to do some serious damage to your liver. So if you think about it in that regard, Anadrol is extremely liver toxic, but guys do run it at very high doses. It's one of the, you know, it's different in that way. It's nothing for a guy to run 100 milligrams a day. We see it every day on the forums. So think about it in that respect, that's basically 10 drinks per day for however long you're going to run that. So just wrap your head around, you know, how much that actually is and how hard your liver's working. And over time, what that will do to you. The first thing you're going to want to do if you are running oral steroids, or, you know, if you really do want to get that liver cleaned out, is drink a ton of water. Water is the best thing you could consume to help clean your liver out. Another, I guess I'll give you the three I view as the most important things you could have for your liver, and that would be Tudka, NAC or NAC, and milk thistle. So those are very, very important. And there's a lot of other things too. And you can certainly go and buy them all individually, but that's likely going to be a pain in the ass. And then, you know, you're spending money on shipping and, you know, trying to find good sites to get all these things from. So what I do is I just use EntuGuard. I've talked about it before. It's probably one of the most staple supplements I use. I use it year round. It contains all these things. There's like 40 ingredients in there. So for me personally, I just find it much easier to use something that's an all-in-one product. So I just get that, and I take 7 caps per day while I run my orals, and I'm good to go. I have had blood work while using orals, while taking it, and I'm fine. Now, will they still be elevated from my base? Yes, they will. But I will still be in that normal range. I'm not going to be elevated beyond that. I'll be, you know, at the higher end, but the difference it makes, it's unreal. And I think, you know, Tudka is probably the biggest one. So, you know, if you can only get one ingredient, that would probably be the one. But Steve, I don't know if you've got blood work, but I know you use the same one. For me, it's worked every time. I've never had an issue. So I just always stick to it.
When you're on EntuGuard on cycle, you'll feel so much better. I mean, you'll sleep better. You'll have more energy. You'll be more, you won't feel like shit. You know, it helps everything. It helps not just your liver, but also helps your other organs as well. It is, like you said, an all-in-one supplement. When you run out of EntuGuard and you're on cycle, you'll feel a difference within a few days. You'll be like, holy shit, I need to get more EntuGuard. Because you'll feel those side effects of the steroids. So the beauty part of EntuGuard is it cuts away the side effects and it allows you to focus on what you should be focusing on cycle, which is getting your gains, getting your sleep, having energy, enjoying your cycle, not feeling like shit. So some of the ingredients besides what Matt mentioned, it has DHA, which is an amazing supplement. This is a fatty acid. And it's found in all living cells. It prevents muscle wasting. It heals kidneys. It helps arthritis. It increases your lifespan when you're using enough DHA. It's something that's found in fatty fish. So if you're not getting enough fatty fish, you should be eating fatty fish at least twice a week. But EntuGuard has you covered. You know, it's funny. Back in the day when I first started using steroids, before EntuGuard came along, you know what I would do, Matt? I would go to the fucking health food store and the vitamin shop, and I'd buy like 10 or 15 different supplements. I'd buy the red yeast rice. I'd buy the taurine. I'd buy the hawthorn extract. I'd buy the DHA. I'd buy the milk thistle. I'd buy the tutka. I'd buy the chlorophyll. I'd buy the beta-glucan. I'd buy fucking, Erva Ursae, dandelion, Allicin, all this shit. I'd buy a separate. It would cost me hundreds of dollars. But you can buy EntuGuard that already has all that shit for like under $100, and you already get all that shit all in one. So it's an amazing supplement, and it's a must run. It's like, I tell you, this stuff sells like crazy. Like, I mean, it's amazing, and I run this shit. I'd run it 7 caps on cycle and 3 to 4 caps off cycle. The recommended dosage is 7 caps a day. But I wish I could afford to run the full 7 caps a day year round. But I run this shit year round, and I'll run it half the dose off cycle and the full dose on cycle. It works like a charm. It works like a fucking charm. It is a hell of a supplement.
Yeah, just let me quickly, before we move on, I want to get this in because there's 3 that I just want to talk about, just to kind of make it relatable for most of you guys, like really common things that will run. So the first one I kind of touched on is D-ball, which, you know, you really want help with the liver toxicity. So that's where it's beneficial to run N2Guard. Another thing you guys love to run is your Trenbolone, right? That's your favorite compound out there. And we know Tren can be a burden on your kidneys. Well, guess what? There's ingredients in N2Guard for your kidneys. And then for you guys that like to run more aesthetic cycles, dry cycles, Anavar. You know, that's another one. But what do we know about Anavar? It absolutely fucks your cholesterol. It destroys it. And guess what? There's ingredients in there to help cholesterol. And that's why, like, we do say it's an all-in-one. Because it's not just for liver toxicity. That's what most of you guys are looking for. So that's where, you know, that talk comes up really common. But for anything that we're running, there really are ingredients for all this other stuff too. There's even stuff in there to help with your prostate, because your prostate does become enlarged, especially if you run these DHT compounds, like, you know, Anavar is a good example. So I just wanted to make sure we went over a few of the common ones there.
Yeah, guys. I mean, you really have to be smart when you're running steroids, guys. Your organs cannot be replaced. This attitude that people have that they can just be stupid and they can run steroids, you know, what have we learned in the past year? Look at the people who have died. Look at Rich Piana. You know, he died. He had an enlarged heart. He didn't take care of his heart. You know, it wasn't just his steroid use. It was a combination of things. But he didn't do anything about his enlarged heart. He knew he had an enlarged heart. We all knew this, but he did nothing about it. You have a lot of bodybuilders dropping like flies. They're going to have more dropping like flies because they abuse their bodies. They don't get proper blood work. They don't check their liver. They don't check their kidneys. They don't take care of their heart especially. And these are things that you have to take care of. So your support supplements are very crucial, guys. And also running an aromatized inhibitor on cycle is important. Because if you don't, you're going to run into water retention. And water retention will strain the heart very, very much. So it's very important to run an aromatized inhibitor on cycle. So speaking of this, we had a question submitted to Matt. And it was a user that wanted to know, should they bulk or should they cut? So before I let Matt chime in on this, let me just say, first off, we all have different goals, guys. And nobody can answer this question except you, yourself. What are your goals? Do you want to be bigger or do you want to be smaller? It's a question that you need to figure out. And I've been everywhere. I've been a small guy. I've been a big guy. Our goals change as we get older. So I'll let Matt kind of get into it a little bit.
So I love this question because in this particular case, this guy's 12% body fat. So he's like, for me, right on that line where it completely is a personal choice. I would say when I get this question, 99% of the time I come back with, you should probably cut. It just seems like cutting's the hardest thing. Bulking's easy. We all seem like we want to bulk, right? We want to eat. We want to lift heavy. We want to get gigantic. We all want to do that. Cutting's tough. You know, you're going to be hungry. You're going to lose muscle. It's not as fun, you know? So that's why I find a lot of times guys are just, they want to bulk and they just want somebody to tell them it's okay. You know, they want reassurance that, yeah, go ahead and balk. What I like to see is if you're making the decision to balk, that you have room to balk. You don't want to be at 20% body fat trying to balk because you're just going to get fat. You're just going to look fatter than you already are. At 12%, there's a lot of other factors we can get into and really discuss. The first thing for me is going to be diet and consistency with the diet. So if he's willing to be, you know, very disciplined with his diet, he could certainly bulk on clean foods, be in a surplus, and go from 12 to maybe, you know, 15% body fat and still look really good. I got no problem with that. The issue I have is, you know, a guy going from 12% to 20% because he just wanted to do that bulk where you just eat Pop-Tarts all day and then you look like shit. And then all of a sudden he's going to regret it. He's going to be depressed and, you know, oh, I just put on all this weight. And then he's going to have to cut so hard just to get back to where he was before he even tried to bulk. So you don't want to do this cycle of bulk, cut, and you're actually not progressing at all. I'd much rather see, you know, slow gains that are more muscle and a lot less, you know, shit weight to you. So with this guy, you know, he's really in a good place. He can really do either. So that's where I agree with Steve. You know, it's a personal choice. I'd like to see pictures of him just to, you know, just to have it make a little more sense to me what he actually looks like. I know what 12% body fat looks like, but I would just like to see his muscle maturity and kind of see where he's at. But I would say, you know what, whatever you want to do, go for it. And, you know, let's set up a nice plan and really get you where you want to be. Follow your goals.
I can tell you, you know, when I was more leaner, I was 7% body fat. Over the course of a year, I set a goal just to get fucking big. I was like, I'm going to fucking bulk. People would ask me, like, what are your goals? And I was like, I want to be fucking big where if I run, you know, if I run into you in an alley, you're going to be fucking scared and shit yourself. You know, that was my goal. So I went from 7% body fat to 17% body fat over the course of a year. I put on a lot of mass. It wasn't all muscle. It was muscle, fat, and water, but I put on a lot of mass. I went from, you know, very skinny, lean guy to very, very big guy. So you just got to be careful. If you bulk like that too fast, you know, it's not healthy to do that. So, you know, as tempting as it is, and I really regret doing it because I know that, you know, once you get big like that, you get strong, but also your joints really, really take a hit. And I noticed that my joints started kind of feeling achy. I had to kind of work through all that. It took me a while to work through, 6 to 9 months to work through all that achy feeling of my joints because you put on all that strength and all that size so fast. So whatever you choose to do, guys, do it slowly. It's not a rush. If you want to bulk or if you want to cut, do it, you know, the right way and do it a conservative way where you're not putting too much pressure on your body, especially when you're bulking, you know. I can tell you another thing too. If you've been skinny your whole life, that and, you know, you get into adulthood and you suddenly start gaining a lot of weight and bulking, then it's going to be a lot easier to cut back down than someone who's been fat their whole life who wants to cut as an adult and vice versa, you know. So muscle memory, body memory are real things. So that could be hindering your goals. So it's important, the longer you're fat, the harder it's going to be to lose that fat. The longer you're skinny, the harder it is going to be to get bigger. So, you know, so if you want to do things, do it. Get on our forums, start a log, say I'm this much, These are my stats. Here's my picture. If you need us to help you determine your body fat, post the picture, block out your face, whatever. We'll tell you your body fat and set a goal. If you're 25% body fat, be like, look, I want to be 15% body fat 1 year from now. And do a log, a weekly log, or update it twice a week or twice a month, whatever. And we will help you. We will help you get there and motivate you. It really does make a difference in it to set a goal and motivate. And we will force your ass to stick to what you're trying to do versus your family or your friends who are probably going to tell you, oh, you're an idiot for doing that. Oh, you know, they're not going to support you, whatever, because that's what they do. Family and friends do that shit, okay? They can't help it. And your idiot friends on social media or whatever, same thing. They're going to do the same thing. But come on our forums. We've been there. We've done that. We're a fitness forum. We're going to help you reach your goals. So don't be shy and come on. So we got one more topic left. I don't know, Matt, you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think the only other thing I would want to say is if you're going to run any steroids or anything on this cycle, because he's kind of back and forth, you know, not sure of what he wants to do, if he decides to bulk, like I said, be careful with the diet. Like, stick with your clean whole foods, just eat more of them than you were before. But I would say if you're going to run anything, I would probably stay away from the big wet bulking cycles like the test deca D-ball cycle, because you're just at risk of getting, you know, a ton of water retention, and then your appetite's going to go through the roof. You're going to end up stuffing it in, and it's just going to end up spiraling into where you're going to have that fat gain. So I think just for this guy, if he does go the route of bulking, maybe if you're going to run something, run it pretty mild, you know, just so you don't have a ton of those effects. And if you're going to cut, you probably don't even need to run anything, to be honest. Like, more and more, I don't feel like you need to run anything when you cut. If you do, maybe run a low-dose test. That's it. Or maybe run just SARMs. That's it. I don't think when you're cutting, you really need to do anything else. It's all about your diet and being in a caloric deficit every single day, not Monday to Friday and then drink and eat pizza on the weekends, every single day. So run something mild if you're going to help hold on to that muscle and focus on the other stuff. So I just wanted to caution about that, but no, let's go on. I know we got a good relationship topic today.
And I just want to add it too. Steroids, many of them increase appetite. So if you're trying to cut down, that could work against you. Because if you're hungry all the time, you're going to want to eat all the time. And the more food you eat, the more calories you're getting in. So that's not what we want if you're trying to cut. So sometimes steroids are not your friends when it comes to cutting. They can help prevent muscle wasting, but they damn sure will increase your appetite for the most part. And that can be your friend, though, if you're bulking. Because, you know, a lot of people who are skinny, they have trouble with appetite. I know I used to be one of those people growing up. I used to always get yelled at the dinner table for not finishing my dinner. But I really just didn't have an appetite and I could not eat. Now as an adult, I have a crazy-ass appetite, so it's the opposite. So our bodies are always changing, guys. So if you're a young guy listening to this, and you're freaking out because you're skinny, whatever, guys, that's not going to be your fate, okay? Things, shit changes. It wasn't until I was in my 20s where I started getting an appetite. So just be a little patient and don't rush shit. And don't hop on steroids if you're a teenager who doesn't have an appetite. Just be a little patient. The gains will come. We have a final topic, and Matt, this is the great thing about having Matt on our podcast, because he's got kids, and this is a great question. It's, should I have kids? And we've got 10 good minutes to discuss this really, really interesting topic. So Matt, first of all, for all those listening who are, they're going to have a kid, their wife or girlfriend is pregnant, and there is a very big fitness celebrity right now who has a pregnant girlfriend who's going to have a kid. And a lot of our listeners might be in this situation. Tell us a little bit about that first year after you have a kid. What is that like?
You literally grow up overnight. All of a sudden, you realize that you mean nothing, that there is somebody ahead of you, and your entire life revolves around this new thing. It's incredible how things can literally change overnight, and they do. It's extremely tough when you have your first kid because you've never done it before, right? You're used to, you know, you live a selfish lifestyle, whether you like to call it that or not. That's what it is. You do what you want to do for yourself. You might have obviously a significant other, but you know, you want to sleep in, you sleep in, you know, you go out, then you go out, unless you got pets to worry about at home. You come and go as you please. The money you make is your money. It's all about you. It's what you want to do. If you are the type of person that wants to live like that forever, do not have kids, because that will change. The beginning is extremely tough just because the first thing that goes is your sleep. You don't sleep. It's not the way it was back in the day. It's not all about the wife, the mother does everything. That's just not the way it is, guys. You're going to be staying up all night with this kid every other day, whatever you two work out. But that's what you're going to be doing.
What did you work out, and what do people usually work out these days?
We did every other day is what we tried to do. Every
so you're
other
staying
night.
Up for what reason? Because the baby's crying at night. It needs to be fed. The baby doesn't just sleep all night.
Right. For most, I mean, we were fairly lucky with ours. But, yeah, the baby probably needs to eat every 3 hours. So somebody's getting up with it just to feed it every 3 hours, not to mention if it does wake up crying. So those things take a long time. You know, when the baby's crying, maybe that's at 3 a.m. Now you're getting up. You're going to see what's going on. You're probably changing the diaper. Then you're going to get the milk if your wife's not breastfeeding, the mom's not breastfeeding. Then you got to heat it up. Then you got to feed the baby, and that takes a long time, right? All this is time consuming while you're half asleep, you know? So you might be up for an hour at from three to four, and then this may happen again at, you know, 6 or 7. So it just over time, the lack of sleep is probably the hardest thing. And then you add to that, you can't do the things you used to do. You can't go to the gym anymore. It's really hard to find time. You have to get into a routine as quick as you can. This is where if you're both into fitness, it really helps because your partner will understand and, you know, have the same goals as you. So you'll go to the gym in the morning and she'll go at night, or you go every other day, whatever you're going to do. But that's the other thing you notice. It's tough to stick to anything that's routine for you. A lot of us eat the same foods every day. We're just used to what we do. And when you have no time, you lose your meal prep. You end up just kind of finding what's around to eat. It really gets a lot tougher. And then you got 100 different family members that want to come over all the time. And all you want to do is sleep. So it's just the beginning is so, so stressful. On top of, you have this thing that you've created that's extremely delicate. So every time there's a little noise or something, you're like, oh my God, is everything okay? That you freak out. So that's just the stuff that's, you know, the beginning. I guess the shock factor is what it does to you physically and how run down you get super quick.
The financial burden of having... let's start with a baby. Like, how much do diapers cost? Because I have no fucking idea. You know, I'm curious. How much does formula cost? How much does all those, like, a crib and all this shit? Like, how much money, like, the economic impact of having a baby run you, like, that first year?
I couldn't even put a total number on it. It would be incredible. And it's going to be different for different people, but... I mean, if you're getting a case of diapers, you're going to say maybe somewhere around $30 to $40. And, you know,
what does that mean? A case of diapers? How many is that?
God, so many. It's been years. My kids are 10 and 8 now. Mm-hmm. So it's been like, you know, 6 years.
So it'll last how long? Like how a case of diapers lasts what for a baby?
Well, maybe if you get about four, if you go through that, maybe 2 weeks, maybe a week, somewhere around that.
So you're spending about $15-$20 a week on diapers. That's not too bad.
Yeah, just on that. Then you got, you know,
But how often do you change the diaper on a baby?
Oh, it could be, you know, a ton. It could be every hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's funny the way things change. So like I just said, my two boys are 8 and 10 now. So there's little milestones along the way. Like when they get out of diapers, you're like, it's amazing, right? You can't even believe. You don't have to deal with those shitty things in your house, in your garbage anymore. It's just, it's awesome. They can actually just go on their own. So you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to save money on the diapers now. Well, yeah, ask me now when my kids are in sports and everything else, how cheap they are, right? They cost a ton of money now.
That's what I was going to ask you. I've read that it costs $250,000 per kid, not including school, up to 18 years old. Is that accurate?
Oh, man, that would be so hard to calculate. It's crazy. Like, I mean, just for my kid to play hockey, just to sign him up, it's like $600 or $700 for the year just to play. And then we have like 3 or 4 tournaments, you know, and then you're talking about just regular life stuff. You know, all the clothes and everything they need. And, you know, as they get older, the amount of food they eat. And now, you know, kids got to have iPads and everything else. And, you know, the vacations you go on in the summertime, things like that. It just, so as they get older, you do get a little bit of your freedom back, but you lose your financial freedom because now all of a sudden they cost way more than they used to.
Well, it's amazing in modern society too, but in the Western North American society, we spend all this money on kids and we get nothing back. Like they don't grow up typically and like make money and give it to us. As parents, they take from us our whole lives. And then when we die, they inherit our money. You see what I'm saying? But in other countries, it's the opposite. Like in India, in their culture, for example, the kids actually take care of the parents and, you know, they give money to the parents. They take care of the parents. Here we have Social Security. We have nursing homes that take care of our parents and our grandparents. So we don't give a rat's ass. So do you think that, you know, like, do you think that that's true? Like, are you getting the money that you're shelling out, the economic impact that you're shelling out, you will never make that back from your kids, realistically, unless your kid grows up to be like a professional athlete or something.
No, we just play for fun. I could guarantee that one. I think this all comes down to maybe one of the most basic things is that you need to decide if you want to have kids. You need to understand this beforehand that
well, what are you getting out of it? Matt, what are you getting out of having kids? Like, are you enjoying it? Is it something enjoyment? Like, to make a decision, should I have kids or not have kids? And is it something, like, worth it? Like, we got to factor in the economic and are you enjoying it? Because a lot of these fucking kids grow up to be teenagers, and they will fucking ruin your life. Like, they will fucking, if it's a girl, she'll go get pregnant at 15. She'll run off with her loser fucking boyfriend on his motorcycle. And or if it's a guy, he'll get a girl pregnant at 15, etc. It's a mess. Like, I had a stepson, and trust me, it was a mess. He got into drugs, and it was just a mess. It was a very stressful situation. So are you getting enough back to have kids?
See, for me, I am. It's completely worth it. I love it. I have, you know, what I have is a typical old school, very stable home. Right. I live in a suburban neighborhood with a good sized house, a wife, 2 kids, my 2 dogs, and it's very stable. It depends what you want. Don't have kids if you can't afford it. Don't have kids if you aren't sure if you want them. don't have kids to save your marriage or relationship. Have kids because you're with somebody you love and you decide that's what you want to do. And, you know full well what you're going to get out of it. For me, there's nothing better than, playing sports with my kids or going outside, taking them golfing in the summertime, like just doing stuff with them, going on the boat, just anything that, when they're super happy, it's awesome how you feel, right? That you've created these people and they love you just because you're their parent. And, it's hard, especially I have two boys, so they fight like crazy. They'll lie about he did this, he did that. But in the end, when you sit down and think about it, for somebody like me and the type of person I am, it's great. If you're the type of person that you want to be, go, go, go all the time about you, then it's going to be very tough for you to adapt to have kids. You might be the type of person then that, hold off. There's nothing wrong with not having kids. It's just we're all different. And if that's your lifestyle, you want to be, super speed all the time and always on to the next thing. And, if you're really into your career, that's fine. Maybe in that case, you're better off to either not have kids or wait until you're older. A lot of people do wait until they're, well into their 30s now to have kids.
There was that scene in Knocked Up. Have you seen that movie?
Yep.
Remember that scene? They're sitting and having dinner, and he makes the point. The guy's like, if you have kids, you can't do stuff. Like, you can't go to India for a year. And his wife is like, you want to go to India? Go to India. Go to fucking India. She, like, gets mad at him. But it was funny because it's true. Like, I don't have kids. I don't even have a pet anymore because my dog died a few days ago. So I got no responsibility. I just have fucking houseplants that I water every other day. So if I want to go to fucking India for a year, I can fucking pack up and go to fucking India for a year. Matt can't do that. You got kids. That's your responsibility until they hit college. Once they hit college, then he can do stuff like that, because they're in college and doing their own thing. So, and it's tough. And sometimes kids don't go to college. Sometimes they want to stay at their parents' house till they're 30 years old. There's kids like that too. So it's a huge responsibility. And it's why I made the decision not to have kids myself, because I don't want the responsibility. I don't want to deal with that. It's a huge responsibility. And it's something that I just choose not to do at this time. Now, maybe I'll change my mind down the road, but right now I just don't want the responsibility. It's too tough, to deal with. So it's a really good discussion, guys. If you want to talk more about this or a relationship topic or a steroid topic or anything, go on our forums, evolutionary.org, and we will talk about it. And it's a really fun show. We love to talk about these different topics just, besides the typical stuff, the typical boring shit you hear on other podcasts. So keep sending us emails, guys, and we will talk about whatever you want. Talk to you guys next time. Thanks for listening.